RIFT Research and Development, reuniting innovators and business tax credits. RIFTResearch.com.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on
Kent Business
Radio.
Nice bit of Diana Ross there.
It was. You should have seen it in the studio, folks. The pair of them were dancing away over in the other side of the...
I was being the Bee Gees.
Thank goodness the mic was on.
Linda was Diana and I was the Bee Gees. I was one with the teeth.
Yeah.
We were rocking.
It was good. Anyway, welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on this Tuesday, the 22nd of September. We meet Paul Andrews and her, Jill Serkin. It's an absolute pleasure now to welcome to the Business Bunker Show the next in our series of the University of Kent Business School BIG project. And this week, Professor Andy Fern and Dr. Simon Raby are going to be talking about the integrator, which is one of the 10 traits identified by the Business Improvement and Growth team at the University of Kent in terms of what makes entrepreneurs successful. So have a listen to this.
Very interesting.
Simon Raby from the University of Kent Business School BIG project, Think Big. And Simon is joined today by Andy Fern, also currently from the University of Kent. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show. Pleasure to see you.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Good to see you too.
Cool. We've been discussing, listeners, over a series of months now, some of the research that the University of Kent Business School have been doing into a project that they call the Business Improvement and Growth Programme. And they've identified 10 traits, 10 themes, 10 areas that businesses focus on. Now, these aren't templates. This isn't a to-do list. This isn't do this and you'll be a bit roaring success or become Richard Branson. They're just 10 traits that have been identified that provide some kind of guideposts to looking about the things we can do in business. And this month, we're going to be talking about the integrator. So, Simon, maybe if you could give us a bit more background into the project, what you're doing, and then what we're going to be discussing today.
Fantastic. No, thanks, Paul, for that introduction, and really great to be here. And also really great to have Professor Andy Fern with us today as well, which we'll talk to Andy in a bit about what he does and what he's an expert in.
Absolutely.
As a supposed expert in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, as you say, the programmes that we run, we do a lot of research. And what we mean by research, we go out there and actually talk to people. Mm. And I suppose that's one of the biggest differences with the work that we do through the University of Kent and the Kent Business School, is we actually talk to business owners about the things that are challenging them, that they're fighting, the obstacles that they need to overcome, the way that they define success and the way they define growth. And so the questions that really drive our inquiry is actually, well, what is success to a business owner? Because it isn't just about getting bigger. It's about more than that. And so, knowing what that actually means that we are better able to help and support business owners in doing what it is that they want to do. So our research focuses on that, and then what it does is it translates into various outputs. It could be a research report, which you've mentioned before in the show, that people can download. It could be a programme, which actually Andy is one of the guest speakers on the programme, which is The Big Journey, which is basically a strategic leadership program for business owners. So there are various different offers and things that are integrated to help business owners move forward. But what we're talking about today is the Big Ten. Mm. 10 being 10 characteristics. And as you say, it's not 10 steps to success or 10 tips or whatever. What they are is effectively lenses into your organisation, into you, and how you deal with particular aspects and areas. So, we've explored particular areas already, whether it be the enthusiast, whether it be the delegator, whether it be the transformer, about change and transition. But we're all doing things in these areas in different ways. And therefore, it's about challenging us and asking us deep questions and thinking about that stuff, giving us the time and space to do that, and actually, therefore, making some decisions in the future about how we might do things differently. It's not a directive, you go and do this. It's a non-directive, let's explore this, let's question this, let's think about it, because your context is very different to other organisations out there, and you need to do what works for you. So today, in particular, we're going to be working with the integrator. But before we do, Andy, I was just really excited to have you on the show. See, we've worked a lot together in the past. But I still don't really know what it is that you do. So I wondered whether you could just tell me a bit about what really interests you in the area of value chain, what value chain even means to you and the work that you've done in the past.
Okay, thank you.
So yeah, happy to be here. And my research is really focused on behaviour, trying to understand people's behaviour collectively in the form of organisations, people that buy stuff, people that move stuff, people that make stuff, people that sell stuff, and the end consumer as individuals. So the behaviour of consumers making decisions about products and services that they buy, and the behaviour of organisations who, in the chain, collectively work together, or don't, as the case may be, to try and deliver and meet the needs and expectations of those consumers. And that's where the value bit comes in. So if you can identify what different consumers want, and if you can deliver it, then that generally means they're going to pay you for it. And if you get it right, they'll pay you more rather than less. And getting that right is really, really difficult.
Absolutely. It's fascinating, Andy. In all of the discussions we've had so far about the traits that we've talked about, everybody has said roughly the same thing. It's always about people. And so many people don't think about that. It is about people, isn't it?
Yes.
Everything we do is about people.
Yeah, I think it's spot on. Obviously, this program is all about people and providing advice and guidance and insight to various kinds of small businesses. I guess my experience over the last 20-odd years working with companies large and small up and down the supply chain from all over the world is they tend, the majority of them, to focus primarily on themselves as people, and then next, if we're lucky, they're some of their employees as people, and they don't give anything like enough attention for a variety of reasons to the people they're buying stuff from, who could cheat on them, and the people they're selling stuff to, who 9 times out of 10 they haven't got who they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is sort of where the characteristic we're exploring today, the integrator, sort of really comes in. And the way that we define the integrator is it's about individuals, leaders, senior leaders, owner managers within organisations, recognising the importance of value chain relationships and the need to communicate and develop trust in those relationships. So a big sort of terms of value, and I think one thing that we want to do by the end of the show is actually understand more about what we mean by value, but also how we deliver it through customers and suppliers, and how do we deliver that value, because that's one of the most important things. It's all very well having an idea of what the value is, but how do we deliver that? So those are really, really important things. So I suppose to start off with, Andy, you know, how would you define value from your perspective, and why is it important to even define it from an organisational perspective?
Okay. I think I'll start with the latter. Why is it important? Because there isn't a company on the planet that has more resources than they can use. But specifically for the SMEs, they have nothing like enough resource to do the things they want to do. So allocating very, very scarce resources to the right aspects of what they do is critical. And if you're spending time and spending money generating value that nobody else shares, then that's called waste. And no business these days can afford to waste. So I think resource allocation is critical. And for me, resources should be allocated according to where value is added. Which takes us to the definition of value. And I guess, for me, simplistically, I think it's a fairly simple way of thinking about it, it's the monetization of utility. Now that might sound a bit academic, but monetization is a good word because it generally is associated with cash, so a pound is associated with that. Utility is really a kind of posh word for satisfaction. So what are the benefits that people get from what you do, delivering a product or a service? And you can break those benefits down into different elements. So generally, we talk about time, form, and place, utility. The focus initially is form. So what is the product? What is the service? What are the attributes of it? And what do people benefit to value in those different elements? When can they get it? How long does it take? And where? So the whole kind of e-commerce age has fundamentally shaken up the utility and value box because people can get stuff they could never get before. And they can get it at times they can never get before. And the options at the form are increasing in number, which is fantastic if you're an SME, because that means there are little bits of markets that want very specific things that you as an SME can do. It's a nightmare if you're a big corporation because you just want to churn out vanilla or sausages that are the same, because that's where you maximise or minimise cost and maximise efficiencies. So understanding value is critical, because through that you can allocate resources most effectively to cut costs, don't do things that people don't value, and add value, differentiate, which puts cash on the table, and recognising that these markets that we're operating in, local, regional, national, global, are fragmenting, they're breaking up. People want to be able to say, no, I don't want those bits, but I want those bits, please. Mm. And where can I get that? And it's a fantastic opportunity for SMEs if only they would look for it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Funnily enough, just recently, the Business Bunker Show, in association with one of our sponsors, Rift County, staged an event where we invited 50 business managers to come and talk about what they saw as the immediate opportunities that they face in the economy and things like that. And one of the big things that came out of that is this recognition that small is beautiful. And in the 20th century, it was all about becoming as big as you possibly could, economies of scale, da 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 da. As you've just identified, Andy, sometimes that isn't always a benefit, because it's like turning on a big cruise liner. By the time you've reacted, the small guys have already been there, done it, and whatever. Not enough of them take a notice of that, or realise that they can do that, or use some of the tools that are available. But increasingly, that is the direction that we're seeing things going. And you're absolutely right. For the first time in history, probably, small organisations can bat well above their weight,
yes,
in terms of what they're able to do, which they couldn't do in the past without huge resources.
Absolutely. I agree with you entirely. The only rider I would put on all that is that just being small, just being an SME, just being passionate about being the best at what it is you do, unfortunately, isn't enough.
So, absolutely.
And that takes you then into all of the communication stuff, the marketing, the positioning. And in truth, if you're passionate and you're very, 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 very good about something very specific, the chances are, 9 times out of 10, you're not thinking about how other people perceive what you do. Mm. You're just amazed that no one can recognise how wonderful you are.
Yeah.
And you can't understand why no one's buying your stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the death of so many SMEs, because the passion takes over from the reality check, which is consumers purchase products and services. Mm. And whether you're large or big, influences, so if you're large or small, the influences for some of the consumers where they're going to go, but ultimately, what are they receiving? What is the product or the service or the experience? What is the problem that you've solved? How is it solved? What is the benefit that you've delivered? Mm. And if you don't get that right, you're doomed to failure, however wonderful you are making or doing what it is that you do.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Andy, you've obviously talked about this, and you've given us a really good definition of value and why it's important, but how can you better understand that as an organisation? How do you actually go about understanding that value? Because you spoke about, we can just get carried away, we can become very passionate internally about the products, but actually how do you understand more about the perceptions, the buying behaviour which you've spoken about?
Yeah.
Why is that important, and how do you go about that?
So there are obvious links between what we're talking about here and marketing, consumer behaviour, market research, insights. The reality is that information these days is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. There is no excuse. 20, 30 years ago, companies could argue, well, we don't know. Mm-hmm. We're not even trying to find out. Because we don't know, we're going to assume stuff and we'll put it out there and see what happens. Mm-hmm. You need very big pockets these days to keep trying stuff that fails. So information is in abundance, but you've got to want to have it. Mm-hmm. So the trouble is, reality sometimes is very, very painful. Mm-hmm. And I'm always reminded of Homer Simpson, who said, if something's difficult, it really isn't worth doing. So you've got to accept the fact that how you perceive the world may not be their reality, the consumer's reality, it's just yours. And you've got to ditch your perception of reality and accept that you need to understand what it is that people are looking for, what they're experiencing, and what they might want from you. And the simple way of thinking about that is finger on the pulse. The more pulses you are fingering, feeling, more consumers you know are alive or dead, hopefully not. And once you've got the pulse, you might have some indication of what it is that you can do to help them live longer, live better with their lives. So And the reason I like thinking about the policy is you've only got 10 of them, so you can't do much with that, can you? Which brings us to the integrator. You can't find all of the answers to all of your problems yourself. Mm. And as we both, as we all know in this studio, many owner managers struggle with giving up control. Mm. They struggle with being challenged when they get some market insight or someone says, but why do you do that? Mm. Why do you incur all that cost in being the best and producing the best property? If the market you're targeting has not the best, they want the fastest, or they want the longest lasting, or they want the quickest. Mm. But if you're doing the whole package, you're probably not as quick as you could be, or as longer lasting as you could be. And then instantly, you are insulting them, you're challenging what they've done forever, mm. what they believe passionately about, and of course they are the experts in what they do. Mm. So there's a huge resistance to finding out the truth, because it can be very, very painful. And there's this perception that it's bloody expensive. Mm. So, you can't afford market research. So then you ask the question, so what do you spend your money on, and how much of that adds value to your business? Well, and then you start to have a conversation about, well, it depends what you mean by value. Mm. And they perceive that everything that they spend money on is important, and everything they do adds value. Mm. And it's the willingness to accept that the value that's created in this product might come from an ingredient or a component part that I've purchased from somebody else. Mm. If I don't know that, and I'm not looking after that supplier, that really important ingredient or component part, and they might just walk somewhere else. And if I'm an SME, chances are I'm not very important to any of them either. Mm. So, unbeknown to me, I've got this stuff going on in my product or service that's really, really dependent upon somebody else's input. It could be a consultant, it could be a packaging company, an ingredient, whatever. And if I'm not looking after that, I might just lose that. Just like that. Mm. And I can't understand why, when I replace that input with another one, my consumers start to complain, or I don't continue to grow. Mm. So that kind of the need to look ahead at customers, gatekeepers, that might be a retailer, and consumers, big ones, little ones, rich ones, poor ones, older ones, younger ones, families, individuals, jeepers, that's complicated, isn't it? Consumers. And if I go through this channel, it's online. If I go to that channel, it's bricks and mortar. What does that mean? Oh, crikey. And now they're telling me I've got to think about where I source stuff from. So it's very easy for an SME, let alone big corporations, to say, nah, stuff there. I know what's right. I do a good job. I'm going to carry on doing it like this.
Mm. Mm. I think you're absolutely right, Andy. And you see it so often. So many businesses get stuck in their comfort zone.
Yes.
And even, it's like the old analogy of a boiling frog, you put a frog in cold water and you're brought to death. And I see that so often. I talk to people in particular industries and you say, how's it going? And they go, it's not good at the moment. And you go, well, what are you going to do about it? Yeah, well, nothing, it'll get better.
Someone else's fault.
Yeah.
It's always the French.
Yeah.
It's always Europe.
Yeah,
they were playing for high level playing field. No, you don't want a level playing. Be good at playing a different game.
Exactly.
I get so sick of people saying to me, oh, it's not fair.
Yeah.
All this stuff gets in the way. Well, to accept that as you can't change that. An individual business, particularly SME, has got £0 influence.
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny one I came across recently talking to some people about their business. And I said, how's it going? And they went, well, we're losing a bit of market share. And I said, well, why are you doing that? And they said, well, the customers are now doing this. And you went, yeah, okay. And I went, yeah, well, they're wrong, aren't they? I went, no, hold on a minute.
They're all coming bobbling back one day, those
silly people. Exactly. And I just said, yeah, but quite possibly they're wrong, but that's where they've chosen to go. And, what are you going to do about that? You're either going to make whatever they're doing work, or you're just going to join in with it, or you're going to ignore it and collapse,
I've got a particular example with that, I suppose, in terms of, Andy, you've mentioned customers and you've mentioned consumers. So you've mentioned two terms that customers are quite different from consumers, but there's an example that I have where I was working with one particular organisation. They belonged to one of the networks that we ran, and they were a blind manufacturer. A manufacturer of blinds. And one of the things that they did is they met with their customer who happened to be a large retailer. And the large retailer, the salespeople said, we've done lots of research into the marketplace. So obviously this was a small firm, Blind Co, let's call them. And so Blind Co went off and thought, we've got this research now, and it shows that this particular product's actually required in the marketplace. So they went off, spent loads of money designing that product, brought it back to the shelves of this large retailer, put it on the shelves, and none were bought, none were purchased. So one of the things that was really intriguing with me is, ultimately they were listening to the customer, but the end consumer, the person who's ultimately going to come and buy that product, weren't interested in that product that had been developed. And that's something that when we talk about the distinction, therefore, between customers and consumers and why it's important, because you don't often have that line of sight, do you, to that end consumer. And if you rely on, again, you're making assumptions, you're relying on other people providing you the data, and you're not going out there yourself to really find out what's happening with your consumers. So I don't know whether you have any particular view on that.
Well, there's an abundance of them, but yeah, assumptions are the mother of all cock-ups, and we make them all the time, and it's so convenient to blame somebody else. Over the last 10 years, we've worked with over 500-600 small food producers who supply one of the country's largest retailers. We work very closely in mining the data from the consumer, translating it and converting it so that those suppliers can do a better job. And it's chilling the ignorance, if you like, the blind spots of those suppliers. But equally, it's so gratifying when a little bit of insight can transform a CEO, owner manager, marketing manager's approach to what they're doing. That could be something as simple as, for example, we're a university. We have students that are given projects. I remember one project with an ice cream manufacturer, small niche manufacturer. They produced the best ice cream in the world, like every SME does, the best of everything. But they were positioning themselves, price-wise, below Ben & Jerry's and somewhere above own label. And the simple point that I made to them was, if you're investing in the world, why don't you buy a price product? And they had nothing like enough confidence in their ability to say, this is the best ice cream in the world. Yeah. You will not taste anything like it.
Yeah.
It better do what it says on the tin, by the way. If it does, then why aren't you communicating that appropriately? So there's a pricing issue, but more importantly, their packaging was designed to be placed at eye level. It was being placed in freezer cabinets. So when consumers were walking down the shopping aisles, they looked over the cabinets and they couldn't see anything. They saw a name and nothing else. So we just sent a student in a supermarket for a couple of days, talked to 30, 40 people, watched them shopping the ice cream fixture, came back and said, this is what they said. They would buy your product before they knew it was there. We took some pictures to show them how their product was positioned. We showed them it and they said, look, clearly you need to do something like this because the customer isn't about to change the way they sell ice cream. So we suggest you look at your packaging. They did that. They repositioned the product and sure enough, their sales started to pick up significantly because suddenly their product became visible. And they weren't telling the customer, this retailer, you're doing a bad job. They were, that cost them zero. It cost them a bit of time to present their problem to the students. And then it cost them some money to invest in the packaging, but of course they had to do it anyway. And without that tiny bit of almost free insight, they would have carried on wondering why these stupid shoppers weren't willing to buy their amazing ice cream. What would they have almost certainly have done as their rate of sale didn't pick up? Mm-hmm. The customer said, we've got a problem with your product, it's not selling very fast.
Mm-hmm.
We think they're too expensive. That's what they always said, look, organics for Christ's sake.
Mm-hmm.
You need to cut the cost, we need to reduce your prices, or you need to go on promotion. No, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to tell people why it's the most amazing product, and they'll be happy to buy it, or certain consumers will.
Yeah.
If they're not, then you've got a problem with the product.
Yeah.
Andy, obviously, that's a fantastic example. How would you say that differs for the service sector in terms of how services are consumed? Obviously, you've given a very visible example in a supermarket on a shop shelf and how you can therefore improve the packaging.
Yes.
But I guess all those principles as well apply to service-based examples and how services are
much more difficult. No one, I think, yet this morning has said, is it or the afternoon? No one has yet said that this is easy, although some of these principles are very, very straightforward. The easy thing about a product is it can be seen. You can go and look at it and you can ask people questions about its elements, its makeup, and then change them. With services, it's much more difficult because you can't see it.
Mm.
It's experienced. And having a dialogue with the consumer about the experience and how it could be improved is more difficult.
Mm.
That doesn't mean to say you shouldn't do it. And if you haven't got a dialogue about how someone is experiencing your product, what they value, then you end up making assumptions, which could end up with you loading up lots of attributes in your service, including things like maintenance, that actually the consumer didn't want. They just wanted this.
Yeah.
They didn't want all the other stuff. And if you're better at everybody else at delivering that service, then that's what you should do. So we talked about people, market research, understanding what value different consumer market segments place on different services and products can only be found by looking at their behaviour. If you can't look, because there isn't a published report, if you can't look, because you can't go into a market, then the only thing you have left is to talk to people. If you don't talk to people, you're essentially selling a commodity.
Yeah.
You said, that's it, it's on the website, that's what we offer, there's three colours, grey, white and purple, take it or leave it. And then you wait for the orders to come in, they don't. So it is more difficult, but it means you change the way that you're selling, because otherwise you won't be able to identify from your consumers how you can differentiate your service.
And one of the things that you therefore mentioned there, I guess, with differentiation is that there's choice. And you can provide a certain amount of choice to consumers or customers. And something that I sort of find really interesting, there was a YouTube clip on Barry Schwartz, for instance, talking about choice. And it's actually a paradox, isn't it? Because how much choice is actually the right amount of choice for a consumer?
There's a concept in the academics of study which is referred to as choice overload.
Right.
So, in a sense, we're all kind of conscious that we're often faced with confused options, whether it's a coffee shop that's offering us 15 different types of coffee or a pair of jeans or even bottles of water, for goodness sake. And it's interesting, your point that you made earlier about those foolish consumers, they've gone away, they've made a mistake. The reality is, the general perception is, more choice is better than less. The minute you start to take options away from consumers, you're getting up, you're banging on the table saying, where's it gone? How dare you make choices on our behalf? The trap that the SME often falls into is trying to offer all things to all people.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they can't, which goes back to the resource allocation point and the need for an SME to focus. So identifying which little niche is not being well served. It may not be the one they thought they were ideally placed to serve, but if they find that through evidence, they can then allocate their scarce resources to do the most amazing job for that segment, which currently isn't getting what it wants. So I think choice editing, is it going to happen? I think it's going to be very difficult to do, because what government's going to start taking away options for consumers? What retailers are going to start taking away from consumers? Answer, look at the discounters, so the rise and rise and rise of Lidl and Aldi in the supermarket world. Yep, they've got a fraction of the products that you'll find in Tesco, which means you, for many, many consumers, you can't get all the things that you want there, so you ain't going to go there. So you don't switch, but the people that have specific lifestyles and all the time to shop in many places will go to certain places, like the discounters, to get specific things, but there aren't so many choices. But the market is fragmenting. SMEs must look for the specific little niche that they can serve so much better than anybody else.
Absolutely. I think you hit a nail on the head there, Andy. It's about niches. Now, it isn't, we talk about small, but the small and independent is about niches. It's about whatever the niche is that you're going to focus on and do whatever that niche requires in order for you to deliver that product, be it quality, cheapness, speed, or whatever. It is about the niches. And I read a book many, many years ago by Chris Anderson, the former editor of Wire magazine, called The Long Tail, in which he identified this as a coming thing. And that struck a real chord with me back in the day when I was starting not my first business, but my biggest business that I run now. And I thought about that very heavily in terms of what he was saying there. And I took my business in a direction that was totally opposite to where everybody else was going, because I could see what he was getting at in that. And it is about dominating that niche, or playing in that niche at least. I think you're absolutely right. Fascinating.
Yeah, and I guess also knowing which niches are going to form in the future.
Absolutely.
And they may be very different niches to what exists currently. And that sort of, I suppose, leads into, Andy, you've shared typically on this sort of subject around value and understanding customers and consumers a couple of top tips that you've often shared, the 3 T's and the 5 W's, and I'm quite interested to know what they are and why we should take notice of them.
Yeah, so I just came up with these simply because I was constantly being challenged by owner managers or SMEs that what I was talking about sounded good in theory, but in practice, how the heck can we do all this stuff? So they were too quick to dismiss the relevance of this for them. So I had to have an answer to that question, because it isn't about Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Mars, Kellogg's and Tesco. It's about SMEs being able to copy what they do, but do it better with the resources. So the three T's, that stands for Till Roll, Talk and Twitter. So Till Roll is, if you like, because no one's a retailer, is you've got sales data. Mm. Analyze your sales data. Now, depending on how you sell, that can give you more or less insight into which parts of the country, which stores, which channels, which lines are selling more or less. And don't rely on your feeling for what's selling. So evidence-based decision-making is critical. You know, as SMEs grow, they put managers in place, they have more stores, they have more markets, they can't know what's going on. Mm. So look at your till roll data, look at your sales data. If you're selling online, it's beautiful, because online sales give you postcodes, you've got sell stuff, and you've got to send it to. So with postcode data, you can do all sorts of things to understand, so is this person living at 24 Acacia Drive in West Hartlepool? Mm. Are there more people like him or her? Because once you've got evidence that I've got similar groups of people, so talk is if you're at farmers markets, or if you're selling people online, if you've got customers that you can talk to, then do that. So have a conversation with them, because anyone can do that, but you've still got to want to, and you've still got to find that nanosecond in the sales process to ask the question, what is it that you would like, rather than how many of these pink ones would you like to pay me for? And the third one is Twitter, which is this a growing interest in social media. We ignore it at our peril. And the trouble with social media is the minute you step into it, it's, oh my God, you know, where's the bottom of this pool? I'm going to drown. Mm-hmm. But wake up to it, SMEs, because you can't say, oh, I can't cope with Twitter feeds. I can't cope with blogs. I can't do Facebook. I don't do this, that, and the other. Well, in that case, again, my view, not for all products, clearly not for all services, but you have to, which goes back to the integrator concept. If you can't do it, then you can join hands with another half a dozen, 20, 30, 40 SMEs that can't do either, and you employ somebody to help you do this for you. Mm. Because you have to. The future is going to... The five W's, very quickly, so I'm running out of time. The five W's is the what did people buy, it's the when did they buy it, it's the who did they buy it from, it's the why did they buy it, and what if I had done something else? Increased the price, changed the proposition, changed the way I presented the product. So what, when, who, why, and what if? If you cannot answer those questions with anything other than an assumption, I think you're in danger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We could talk about this for a long, long time. Sadly, we're reaching the end of today's show. As always, we will have a blog about the integrator that goes up on kentbusinessradio.co.uk website under the blogs, where you can read the blog about the integrator and all the other traits that we have discussed and will be discussing on there. Simon, I don't know if you just want to wrap up on that in terms of where we are and what we've done today.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fascinating. I mean, we focus largely on value, what we mean by the concept of value, and how we better understand what value we actually provide. And rather than just taking the kind of a blinkered view that, you know, we are all passionate about our businesses, clearly we are, it's something we've developed for many years quite often. But if we don't challenge ourselves with the assumptions of what is really valuable to the consumer, the end people who actually consume, taste, buy, use your product, your service, then we're in trouble, because that value will change. It's not a constant, it's something that is ever-changing. So I think that's been a really interesting thing to explore, and clearly Andy's mentioned about market research and the importance of really doing that, and that it's not an expensive thing to do. We can often think it is, but there's some really simple tips.
Yeah.
I think what we haven't had time to cover today, which is something that we can think about how we do this, is we've written blogs on this, so we can bring those blogs into the future blog, is around collaboration.
Mm.
And this key area now really coming to the fore of how important it is, especially for smaller organisations, to collaborate together, to work together, and to understand how they leverage the relationships with their suppliers and also their customers to better not only understand things, but also provide resources, access resources, to do more stuff better.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you should say that, Simon. I've been involved with two things just recently. The Forging the Future lunch that I talked about earlier with our 50 businesses, and I also spoke at a thing a couple of weeks ago called the Success Summit, which had 100 delegates talking about this, and both of those events spent an awful lot of time talking about collaboration. A lot of SMEs now see the power of collaboration. They're not entirely sure how to do it, they're not sure where it's going, but everybody knows that that's where we need to be looking now.
And my only concern with this moving forward is that collaboration is a very relational thing, it's relationship based. We've already got British Standards now coming out with a collaboration, ISO, whatever it is, and you start to look at it and you think, Is it going to be transaction based? Are people buying it as a badge, being included in particular tenders and procurement processes, or is it that we're really going to challenge ourselves with how we manage quality, how we manage relationships, how we work with those from very different aspects? So I think there's a challenge there in the future about how we understand the concept of collaboration. And it's an area I know that really links in well with the value chain and the integrator.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for that. I'd like to say a big thank you to Professor Andy Fern, Dr. Simon Mabey from the University of Kent. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show this afternoon. Absolute pleasure to see you, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Cheers.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on campusesradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 22nd of September. Dr. Simon Raby, Professor Andy Fern of the University of Kent Business School, talking about the trait integrator there.
Very interesting, as usual.
Absolutely, fantastic. If you want to find out more about that, on the Kent Business Radio website, under the blog section, there's a whole blog entitled BIG. It tells you all about the project. There's a facility to download free of charge a booklet that outlines all 10 of the traits. There are also links to each of the blogs that we've covered so far. I think we've done 5 of the 10 traits so far. There's a blog about each of them, and there are links to all the sound files of each of those traits. And there's also links to the University of Kent website where you can explore some of the in-depth research data that goes behind the kind of things that those guys are talking about. So do check that out. On a completely different note, I've just had a completely new email come in from the Anne Robertson Centre.
Oh, yes.
And they say they'd love to thank their current clients and welcome new ones. And they want to do that by offering a 10% discount on all new room bookings for dates from now until Christmas. This includes evening bookings on Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Thursdays when the centre is open until 9 p.m. The Anne Robinson Centre is part of the Pilgrims Hospices and it's at 55 London Road, Canterbury. And you can find out more about it by going to the charity website, which is www.pilgrimshospices.org. Pilgrimshospices.org, and that's their fabulous resource, the Anne Robertson Centre, which is in London Road, Canterbury. And there are 10% discounts on room bookings from now until Christmas.
That's a beautiful venue as well.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
It's good to see that Pilgrims Hospice is thriving again, because there was a bit of doubt, wasn't it, about it closing and things.
Absolutely,
yeah. There was an uproar, and I think it seems to be sorting out now.
It does indeed, yeah.
Look, there's a listener. This is very important. This is September. There's an East Kent Women in Business networking dinner at the lovely Faversham Creek Hotel, where I can often be found frolicking with lovely Fabio, the maitre d' there. Wednesday 30th of September, 6:30 p.m. It's £20 per person, members and non-members. And they say how to book. You need to email Perry, that's P for Peter, E-R-R-I, at A-M for Mother, M for Mother, F for Freddy, S for Sugar, .co.uk, with your menu choice. So you'll need to go on to find out the menu there. But it's Wednesday 30th of September. It's Perry at amps.co.uk, and she's given out bank details. I don't think I should be reading those out. But the booking needs to be done by midday, Wednesday 23rd of September, and that is Faversham Creek Hotel, East Kent Women in Business Meeting Network Dinner. Sounds fabulous.
Fantastic. Thank you for that.
There's a Fields and Forage, which is a flower arranging workshop at Anna's Country Flowers. You can discover the delights of autumn in the Kent countryside and learn how to arrange a vase of forage findings. And the workshop will be, where is it? Let's have a look. It's £75. You need to contact Julie Davies, flowerworkshops.co.uk, or you can phone 0777 326 5863. And that's Friday the 2nd of October, and it's at Anna's Country Flowers in Chilham, Kent.
Fantastic.
That sounds lovely.
Talking about networking, there's a new networking group being started in Kent. There's no membership fees, and it's relaxed and informal, and it's called Spitfire Networking.
Sounds good.
And it's on the first Thursday of every month at Kings Hill Golf Club. And the next meeting is the 1st of October, and it only costs you your time and a £10 contribution to spend a couple of hours networking with the business movers and shakers from all over Kent. Make the connections that help your business grow. Coffee and tea are included with a light buffet lunch. You can register and pay online at Spitfire Networking. And now with added value, membership classified, so never forget who you meet. Just add your own details within the member pages, and that is spitfirenetworking.com. So do check that website out.
Are you an enterprising woman, Paul Andrews?
I am.
And do you want to build your business through digital know-how?
I do.
You may want to be part of the digital future.
I will love to be.
You may apply now for the exciting new Women's Enterprise Kent programme. More women each year are feeling inspired to start or grow their own business and create a career that works for their lifestyle, which I agree with, don't you? Working around children, Linda?
Absolutely.
And dogs and cats and all sorts. And mothers and elderly parents. We are the in-betweeners, after all, as women. To enable you to do this, Kent County Council has, in conjunction with the Government Equalities Office and leading technology experts, they're bringing you a series of entrepreneurial classes and clinics. So it's September 2015 to March. There's no cost, and they're looking to recruit 30 women. It's a one-day commitment, which is once per month, and a half-day mentoring per month. You need to go to kent.gov.uk, Women's Enterprise Kent, and the Facebook is Women's Enterprise Kent to find out more. It sounds exciting, and it's free.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Channel Radio News Update.
It's that time in the show where we give you an update on the news from the Federation of Small Business and other news affecting the business community. The Federation of Small Business have their regional AGM, to which everyone's invited, and it's taking place on Thursday, October the 15th, between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. and it will be taking place at the Tudor Park Marriott Hotel, Ashford Road, Bearsted. That's just outside Maidstone. You can join fellow FSB members to hear about the past year's activities and vote in a new regional team to represent you, the businesses of Kent, in 2015 and 2016. So do please come along to that. That's the FSB Regional AGM at the Tudor Park Marriott Hotel on Thursday, October the 15th. If you go to the Kent Business Radio website, to the blog section, there's a blog entitled FSB Events, and on there is a link to book your tickets. Or you can go to fsb.org, select regional tab, Kent and Medway, and there you will also be able to find a link to book your ticket, your free ticket, to come along to the AGM on October the 15th. Do come along and vote for who you'd like to represent you on the panel of the Kent and Medway Federation of Small Businesses.
There's a regional AGM, and all are invited, and it's... Is this the one you just said?
It's what I just
Tudor
read.
Tudor Park Marriott Hotel.
I just read
October
that.
October the 15th.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Nothing like reinforcement,
well,
though.
Well, exactly. You know, I think probably I read it better. But it's eventbrite.co.uk, FSB, Kent and Medway. So they obviously really wanted us to read that, Paul Andrews.
Thank you.
They? I've got a very long one here, so to speak.
Have you?
Hope you don't
Who
mind.
Who were, Mrs.?
Rogue editors. This is quite serious. Rogue editors have been targeting small businesses on Wikipedia.
Right.
So there's a bit of a warning here. Hundreds of small businesses have been victims of sophisticated blackmail scams by rogue editors on Wikipedia as discovered by a national newspaper. It's The Independent that's discovered this, and they revealed that small businesses from Dorset to Shoreditch, London, have been told to pay hundreds of pounds to protect or update their businesses on Wikipedia. And the Wikipedia have told the newspaper, The Independent, that in some instances the money requests have amounted to blackmail. The online encyclopedia has reacted to what it described as a coordinated group of fraudsters by blocking 381 accounts. And the investigation is called Orange Moody, and it's revealed that those accounts were run by Wikipedia registered users who offered to change entries about companies in exchange for money. The first account that aroused suspicion was identified earlier this year. And the general suspicion is that many of these accounts were actually controlled by just one person. At the moment, the identity of the fraudsters is still unknown, says Wikipedia. And the first victims of fraud were businesses that were having difficulty uploading articles about their companies. And they were frequently told that the reason for why their articles were not going up or being taken down was because they were deemed to be too promotional, even though it is likely that they were the scammers themselves who were taking down the articles. So this is pretty serious. So be very, very careful if you are targeted. One of the companies targeted was the Hertfordshire-based Quality Villas, and the company's general manager, Dan Thompson, told The Independent that after the article was rejected because of lack of notability and the content up there did not meet Wiki requirements, an editor reached out to Mr. Thompson and said he would rework the article to Wikipedia standards, and the article was successfully uploaded, and Mr. Thompson was then presented with a charge of £260. After he paid it, the article disappeared again. That's outrageous, isn't it?
It is.
Just shows you.
There are so many scams about, and you have to watch those kind of things.
You know,
do. Be really, really careful. Don't respond to things. I mean, you know, I know that new technology can be confusing, but, you know, you've got to be on your guard. If people ring you and ask you for anything that involves passwords, account numbers or anything else, your answer is always no. I did have a strange one a few months ago where a very well-known bank actually really did ring me and asked me to confirm my password. And
really?
I went absolutely tonto at them and went,
yeah,
don't be so damn ridiculous. You spend all your time telling people not to do that. Oh, yeah, but I'm the real person. And I went, oh, for goodness sake. Go away.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you know they were really a bank?
Because
did you run round, peer through the window and see them on the phone?
No, I could tell they were because they had responded to something I literally just done online. But their approach was completely wrong. And I did tell them in no uncertain terms that that was a really dumb thing to do.
The thing is, the scammers are getting cleverer and cleverer with logos, yeah, and things like that. You know, some of it does look very, very real.
Yeah, absolutely. MHS Holmes is thrilled to announce that Maria Salil, who is their digital communications coordinator, has been shortlisted for a Mark Hanson Award for Excellence in Social Media at the UK Social Media Communications Awards. Organised by Public Relations Consultants Association, the National Awards celebrate the very best in UK social media communication and reward the individuals, companies and organisations that are using online platforms to communicate in innovative ways. Maria joined MHS Holmes in 2013. MHS Holmes, by the way, are a social housing organisation based in Mid-Kent, and is responsible for the company's digital communications output, including managing the website, social media channels, email marketing and video production. Maria previously worked as a freelance journalist in Kent and graduated from Canterbury Christchurch University with a degree in multimedia journalism.
Kent and Victor Chamber have a breakfast networking, which is a full English, 8 to 9.30. Members are £15 plus VAT, and non-members are £20. There's an opportunity to put your business in the spotlight, to highlight your products, services, and explain how these can help others. So the next one that's coming up is Faversham Golf Club, Thursday the 24th of September. And then following that, you've got Friday the 25th of September at the Turner Contemporary in Margate. And then there's also Friday the 2nd of October at the Royal Wells Hotel, Royal Tunbridge Wells.
Thank you for that.
There's also, Paul Andrews, a Kent Invicta Chamber of After Hours networking, which is 6:30 to 7:30. No need to book, they say. And it's tonight at Northfleet Centre, Northfleet. And then also tonight at the Farmhouse in West Morling. Tuesday the 6th of October at the Conningbrook Hotel in Ashford.
I have to say, I screamed at Radio 2 on Saturday night.
Yeah.
I was in the car listening to Lisa Tarbuck, She had an email from Wes Malling.
Oh, she said
it's screamed at her.
I'm not the only one.
Who are you, Jules? Are you Jules? It's Wes Malling.
She probably listens, you see, to my pronunciation. Yeah,
yeah. Well, my husband started calling Root and Rotham when he first got into the UK.
Just
on the Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce, I'll be doing my presentation about the taboo of about productivity during October and November. So if anybody's interested in hearing more about those statistics I was talking about earlier, I'll be on the breakfast circuit.
That's the lovely Linda Garcia. Well,
thank you.
As that comes around that date, we'll publicise it on the show as
and
well.
Tweet us and remind us.
I will.
Has the FSB helped your business grow? Perhaps you've benefited from tax protection insurance, or you've used the fuel discount card, or you've joined meetings with senior decision makers. Please can you let us know? We're looking for positive case studies for the FSB website, and you can put your stories up to Alison Palmer. And that's alison.palmar, P-A-R-M-A-R, alison.palmar@fsb.org.uk. So any good news about using any of the services or facilities provided by the Federation of Small Business, do email Alison and let her know, please.
Remember, it's the Kent Business Tweet Up at Lenley's, which is Thursday 24th of September, 10 to 11:30. In Lenley's in Roper Road, Canterbury, and there's free parking, and there's a lovely little terrazzo restaurant there.
Cool. There's an employment law update. A leading regional law firm, Furley Page, highly ranked by Chambers and the Legal 500, is presenting a practical interactive workshop on employment law for Chamber members and non-members. The workshop is suited to all employers, no matter the size of your workforce, and includes an extensive question and answer session. The topics being covered are the new government's current and future programme for employment law, practical guidance on how to prepare for changes, effects on HR policies and procedures and people management, covers new cases, employment reforms and implementation of European directives. It's taking place between 8:30 a.m. and 12 p.m. And it's taking place at the Bridgewood Manor Hotel, Chatham, on Thursday the 22nd of October. So do check that out. Jules. That's it. You've read all yours, have you?
I've done mine. I'm very diligent, aren't I, Linda? You see?
Are you?
Absolutely.
She's been watching me, you know, like
measuring productivity around here.
Yeah, she's made notes.
Well, I've got a couple more. Kent Invicta Chamber have an apprenticeships event. This event will be a chance to learn about the benefits and understanding of employing an apprentice and the support available to you. The British Chambers of Commerce, in association with the National Apprenticeship Service, have organised a national programme of events to explore how apprenticeships can benefit your business. That's taking place this Thursday, the 24th of September, at the Tudor Park Hotel, Bearsted, just outside Maidstone, and it's from 7:45 a.m. to 9:45 a.m. And you can book by going to kentinvictorchamber.co.uk/business advice. So check that out. And that is also sponsored by the Federation of Small Business. And the government have announced a crackdown on minimum wage non-payments. Businesses that fail to pay their employees a minimum wage of £7.20 by next April could face fines of up to £20,000. In Chancellor George Osborne's summer budget, the Conservatives announced that the government would receive a pay rise, with the national minimum wage being increased from £6.50 to £7.20 for those aged over 25. The wage increases will kick in from April 2015. So that's taken the opportunity to warn employers about breaking the rules. Now, you need to understand this, because a lot of people get very confused about the rules surrounding this. There are some very straightforward rules about what constitutes hourly pay. And you cannot work out the hourly pay based on what you paid someone over a year. Okay. Bizarrely.
Really?
It is really down to the hourly rate you pay them. Mm-hmm. You might pay them a whopping bonus at the end of the year, but that doesn't count. If you've underpaid them, then you will get fined for not paying the minimum
wage. So it's all about the hourly rate.
It's all about the hourly rate, and it can't include tips, and it can't include a lot of other things. So you really do need to check it out, because it's another one of those pieces of typical government red tape that has 1,000 caveats in it. Mm. And people get caught because they think, you know, over the course of a year, I've paid someone £20,000 or whatever they paid them. But that doesn't count. It is basically the hourly rate that is important.
It's been very interesting reading in the news about this, the tipping business, Linda, you know, in restaurants where these poor kids are not actually getting the money.
Benefiting,
So that's been quite shocking, I think, to a lot of us. And a lot of the chains that are doing it.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
Absolutely.
I've been writing a little bit about the hidden impacts on this new national living wage that's coming into effect. I mean,
it's
over the next 5 years,
20.
It's going up to £9 by 2020. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that employers need to be thinking about, because it's not just the frontline workers who's obviously going to be going up to the minimum wage. That may then have an impact up your hierarchy, because if your supervisors are currently earning, or your managers are currently earning what the new minimum wage is going to be, then it's going to have a knock-on effect. So you really need to budget very carefully as to what impact that's going to have on your business.
I was quite, I mean, my son is a qualified lifesaver, qualified swimming teacher and a lifeguard. Mm. And he's a student at uni, he's 19. He's getting £7, which I thought, actually, you know, if you save someone's life who's stuck on a flume in a swimming pool, £7 isn't actually very much, is it? By the time you pay your bus fare to get there and blah-de-blah. So I don't know. I don't know what you think.
It doesn't always equate to the level of responsibility
exactly.
that you have.
No, exactly.
Yeah, but that's where national things like that don't count because it's just silly. It doesn't mean anything.
No.
There's an FSB auto-enrolment workshop on the 22nd of October. And that's been presented by Steve Kilfoy of Squirrel Financial Planning. And it's taking place at the Elwick Club in Ashford. And it is on, as I say, the 22nd of October. So do check that out. All of the FSB events are to be found on the Kent Business Radio website on the FSB events page under the blog tab.
Channel Radio News Update.
So that was the news update from kempersisradio.co.uk.
Lots of networking going on.
Absolutely.
Autumn.
Absolutely. I just want to say a huge, huge thank you to today's show sponsor, Offex. A massive thank you to our guests, the lovely Linda Garcia.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Jules. It's been a really entertaining afternoon.
Dr. Simon Raby and Professor Andy Fern of the University of Kent. And all of you that participated. Oh, we did just get a tweet from Hilary Steele talking about the Women in Business thing that you just read out.
Okay.
And she said, I suggest that Vanilla Webb goes all out and dresses as a woman for this charity because he'd look cute in a frock.
Well, it's been said, hasn't it, already, about you and your pink tutu.
We have got the model of him in his pink tutu here.
Yeah, we have. But he needs the wig, doesn't he?
So thank you for that.
I'm seeing him, Hilary, with a big sort of Diana Ross afro.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Anyway, we've run out of time.
Perhaps a handbag.
Coming up on Channel Radio next, at 5 o'clock, we have...
The lady's favourite.
The lady's favourite, Mr Craig Avery. And that is followed at 7 o'clock by...
Welcome all to the New Potatoes Show.
Hey, this is Jamie from the New Potatoes Show. Join me live every Tuesday from 7 until 9 p.m. on channelradio.co.uk. We'll be exploring the best in new music from around the world, having 18 tracks and 2 hot potatoes for your listening pleasure. Tune in. Dig up.
New Potatoes with Jamie Andrews on Channel Radio.
That is immediately followed at 9 o'clock by the fabulous Mr. Boy George.
Boy George.
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
1, 2, 3, get down!
Full drum beat and a squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
nights, 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
Cool. So do stay tuned to Channel Radio for the rest of the day. But
in
the meantime,
shows.
You've been listening to me, Paul Andrews, and heard Jill Serkin on the Business Bunker show. We will be back with you next week. Have a fantastic week, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Paul Andrews and the Kent Business Bunker on Channel Radio.